you thought, about applying your preference aggregation schemes to a non-formal political environment. I would say that the sexiest types of use of the type of voting technologies you're talking about are in the political realm, but the need to aggregate preferences applies in all sorts of group decision-making contexts. And sometimes you have to walk before you run. And there are certain applications today, like I belong to maybe 4 or 5 Yahoo groups. And the Yahoo groups, there's about 10,000 groups now in America. This is an online discussion groups. They all offer polling and basic survey features. But you're talking about a much more sophisticated system of aggregation. And perhaps if you trained American in their day-to-day online discourse to use the type of preference aggregation schemes you're using, by the time you propose it in a political realm, many Americans would be familiar with it. It would seem less radical than it is today. So maybe a good strategy would be to apply some of these in other contexts. For example, the U.S. military has just adopted Info Workspace, where all the captains get together, talk to their troops, and then the captains can get all the way up to the central command, and they aggregate preferences with surveys, polls. Great way. But maybe they could use some of your techniques, and once you have millions of people using it, you'd be more effective. Have you thought about applying your ideas in non-political, formal political
context? Yeah, just real quick. We've encouraged organizations, for instance, to use instant runoff voting or proportional representation to elect their own officers and such things. I think you're right that the more people are using these in their daily lives, you know, there's a lot of web polls that go on today. So we've been contacting them and saying, hey, use a ranked ballot system. Why stick people with a winner-take-all system where the winner will have 10% of the vote? Why not get to a majority and use a ranked ballot system? No question that if we can get people using these in other parts of their lives. I went out with a group of friends and we were picking pizza and we were going to use a winner-take-all method and everyone was going to end up eating meat, even the vegetarians. So then we asked the chef, do it proportionally. Give us all our fair piece. You know, you can use it in different ways like that.
Yes. I was on the way over here, I was reading today's roll call and they talk about the issue that your book is and the need. But they came up with a much different reform. I want to run it by you. They say in Iowa they have the Legislative Service Bureau, which draws up the redistricting on a basis of being free from politics, and they do it based on equal population compactness and the areas that are right next to one another, not partisan tilt. And they say that as a result, 4 out of the 5 Iowa House districts remain very competitive, and that's quite different than where 90% of the seats are not competitive nationwide. So that is a fix, I think, that could be more quickly adopted than some of the things you're talking about, which, if you're going down the route of changing the Senate, require constitutional changes. So I think that wouldn't be well received. But something like this, I think, is more doable and more quickly.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, it's certainly in the book. I try to think outside the box as much as possible because I think we really have to map what's happening to our politics and our political system, and then we think more practically about how do we get there. Taking the redistricting out of the hands of the incumbents is, to me, is just such a no-brainer that it's amazing to me that we still don't do it in most states. There are a few states like Iowa. Arizona just passed a voter initiative a couple years ago where it takes redistricting out of the hands of the incumbents, gives it to an independent, nonpartisan commission that uses criteria like you just read. You have to have criteria because even these independent commissions are, you know, impacted by politics and they're appointed and that sort of thing. So you got to have non-political criteria like compactness of district, respect geographic boundaries. You could even have one like enhanced competition. You just put that criteria in, and let me tell you, you would turn redistricting on its head. So that would be a first step towards at least getting some movement. But you have to recognize that part of the problem, the defects of the winner-take-all system have to do with it being a geographic-based system. So even if you, in the best case of public interest redistricting, you're still going to have situations where, like Chicago, is mostly Democrats. And there's Republicans there, but no matter how you draw those districts in Chicago, Republicans are still going to lose. And downstate Illinois is still predominantly Republican. And no matter how you draw those districts, no matter how you carve them up, there just aren't enough Democrats to disperse around unless you're going to gerrymander a district specifically from Democrats, and then you're getting away from your criteria. So we have to start with independent redistricting commissions, but even if we do that, we're still going to be frustrated by a lot of the problems with our winner-take-all system of lack of competition. It'll be better with the commissions, but it won't be good enough, lack of choice for voters, and they're still going to be able to figure out, okay, this district over here is safe, this one over here, we're never going to win. We target all our resources to just a handful of districts. We use our polls and focus groups to, you know, figure out what the issues are to make the swing voters in those districts jump, et cetera, et cetera. So those are the things that really are a product of the winner-take-all system, and redistricting commissions won't fix that.
And we have time for a couple more questions. Right over here.
And I agree with your analysis, but an advantage of two-party systems could be that it forces a very diverse country into two groups where they have to form coalitions and learn to work together. And in a multi-party system, you'd make us all more insular. We'd all move into smaller groups, and we'd have less to do with other people. And the two-party system, as it stands now, doesn't force us into coalitions, and doesn't that also allow opportunities for people to negotiate before they come together as a party? For example, Tom DeLay is interested in Connie Morello winning, a conservative and a moderate, because in the interest of their party. Democrats have a very interesting coalition, the Democratic Party, they pulled together. So it's forced people to sit down with different people to form a coalition early, at least with politicians.
Right, and this is what a lot of political scientists will say about the winner-take-all system. I actually have two chapters in the book sort of going at this notion that somehow the winner-take-all system, the two-party system, does sort of force us into more of the broad tent coalitions. And I found that there wasn't a lot to support the evidence of it, that, like I said, in the South, increasingly moderates are disappearing from both parties. The parties are polarizing. There's all sorts of research and data showing that there's just no question that the parties are polarizing, that increasingly the leadership of the parties are coming from the wings of the party, not from the center, and these sorts of things. There's some research, people like Anthony Downs and others who have done some of the theoretical research on this. What I found in looking at this is that Anthony Downs had this idea of that the two parties somehow would converge over a certain can of issues, so to speak, and this kind of theoretical assumption is what has crept into a lot of our politics. But Downs also posited another notion, is that the two-party system, when the electorate is more polarized, will actually the parties themselves will polarize, and that's more, I think, is where we are today. And yet a lot of the assumptions that have been built into what we talk when we talk about winner take all is it's sort of like we strip mine Downs and his theoretical work to come up with something that validated our political system, and yet it doesn't hold up to the evidence. And there are other researchers like Huber and Powell, for instance, who studied both proportional representation democracies and what they call majority influence democracies, and they found that the policies that are enacted by the proportionate influence democracies were closer to the mean of what voters say they wanted based on opinion polls and such things than the majority influence democracies, because when you have a multi-party situation, you have representation points of view from all across the political spectrum, and so the interaction among the players tend to pull policy closer to the center. Whereas with the majority influence democracies, when you have these two players and they're polarized, then the dynamic between them tends to push policy further away from the center. So, I could go into some more examples, but, it's in the book. If you get a chance to read those two chapters on policy, and it really shows how we really aren't getting centrist policy from our supposed centrist winner-take-all process.
Thank you, Stephen Hill. The book is Fixing Elections. We thoroughly recommend it. It's a very important book about the democratic crisis facing the United States today. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you.